I'm Tom Hall. This is Midday. Today, it's Midday on Sports. The Ravens have lost 5 of their last 7 games, but when they win big. A win against Houston tonight keeps them in the playoff picture. Come on, all you dads, repeat after me. Defense wins football games. Moms, you can repeat that too, but the NFL might not want us repeating the stats on their dismal TV ratings. What's driving us away from our sets on Sunday afternoons? And if you thought the state of Alabama had its hands full with their Senate race, Bama fans are smarting from a loss to Auburn on Saturday. What does that portend for the college championship picture? Latasha Miles of Women Talk Football 2 and the SheESPN Network and Mark Hyman of George Washington University are here. We'll take your calls and comments when Midday starts right after the news. And don't adjust your sets. It's not Sunday afternoon. It's Monday afternoon, and it's Midday. I'm Tom Hall, and today it's Midday on Sports. The Ravens take on the Houston Texans tonight at M&T Bank Stadium. A win keeps them in the playoff picture. They've had to overcome the challenges that attend a roster that has been plagued by injuries this season. Quarterback Joe Flacco has taken more than his share of hits this year, including one that put him out of commission for a while under the league's concussion protocol. But in the 5 games the Ravens have won so far this year, it has been the defense, not the offense, which has garnered the credit for putting the Ravens in the win column. The NFL's TV ratings are down 20% since 2015. Their commissioner, Roger Goodell, however, is asking for a new contract that would pay him more than what Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers make combined. And lest you wonder how important health insurance is, he's suggesting that a reasonable package for him would be $50 million a year, the use of a plane, and health insurance for life. Some owners are not feeling him, as we say. And in college football, a big and unexpected win Saturday night for Auburn, who triumphed over number 1 Alabama in what's come to be known as the Iron Bowl. That win has brought speculation about the final 4 teams in the college championship playoffs to a fevered pitch. We'll talk about all of this, plus whatever is on your mind, with 2 good friends of our program. Mark Hyman is on the faculty of the Sports Management Program at George Washington University. He's the author of several books, including Concussions and Our Kids, America's leading expert on how to protect young athletes and keep sports safe, which he co-authored with Dr. Robert Cantu. Mark, good to see you.
How are you, Tom?
Doing great, thank you. And Latasha Miles is with us as well. She's a sports commentator and the author of the book When Football Season Turns You Into His Side Chick, The Ultimate Survival Guide for Relationships and Households During Football Season. Hey, Latasha, welcome back.
Thanks so much again for having me. And I just want to take a moment, if I could, to send condolences to the family of Terry Ann Scott and also the loved ones of Sean Taylor, as today marks the 10th anniversary of his death.
Indeed. Terry Ann was to be with us this afternoon, but Terry's dad passed away over the weekend. Of course, she is with her family, so we are keeping Terry and Sean Taylor in our hearts today and sending condolences. If you would like to join our conversation about sports today, our phone number here at Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org, and our Twitter handle, @MiddayTomHall. So, Latasha, let me start with you. The Ravens, 5-5, in second place in their division behind the Pittsburgh Steelers. The Steelers at 9-2 are way out in front. But from your vantage point, I mean, you went to spring training or to preseason camp with the Ravens this year and got a read on them back then, and you've been following them closely. What's your take on the Ravens' capacity, opportunity, possibility of making the playoffs this year?
Well, after the Patriots and the Steelers, it's pretty much a free-for-all when it comes to the AFC. I mean, look at how the Kansas City Chiefs started off 4-0, and then they've lost 5 out of their last 6. And then you have Jacksonville. They've actually been surpassed by Tennessee now. And then you got the Chargers. All of these teams are kind of muddled in with your 6-5s, you know, kind of interchangeably. So the door still remains wide open for Baltimore when it comes to a wild card spot. Oh, also Oakland Raiders. There was high expectations for them as well. And they're kind of fighting for a wild card spot as well. So there's, after those two 9-2 teams that are holding the 1-2 seats respectively in the AFC, there's still a chance for Baltimore and any other team who kind of wants to control their own fate. I think it's really important that Baltimore gets back to running the ball frequently, efficiently, and effectively. And I honestly think that, because I've never been a fan of this, once they paid Joe Flacco after they won that Super Bowl, it's kind of been on pause for Baltimore ever since. Like, you really don't have a lot of money to make expendable to get these extra pass rushers with Terrell Suggs being older. And, you know, you just don't have the chance to really reestablish that running game that you once had when you had Ray Rice. So, but the thing is, it's wide open for them. So they just have to win out. And once again, just get back to running the ball and keeping Joe Flacco healthy as much as they possibly can.
Yeah, healthy and unsacked, Mark Hyman. He's taken his share of hits this year, hasn't he?
Yeah, this has been it was a difficult year from day one of training camp for Joe Flacco. There was some question whether he was even going to play this year because of his back. So, yeah, difficult year for him. But as Latasha says, totally wide open at this point. We're in week 11 of the season. One team in the AFC has been eliminated from playoff contention. One team.
Right.
So
Cleveland, right?
Yeah, Cleveland is 0-11.
They have yet to win a game, and is it possible that Cleveland won't win any games this season?
Not only is it possible, I think it's entirely likely. There are no – Latasha, do you think there's a team in the NFL that's worse? Do you think there's a team in college football that's worse than the Cleveland Browns right now?
Oh, honey, it's high school playoffs, and I'm trusting some high school teams to beat Cleveland, unfortunately. I mean, and it's not even a knock on Cleveland's roster. I mean, they drafted well with the defensive players. They've been plagued by injuries once again, and it's just, I hate it for them, the fact that they passed up Wentz and Watson, and they're still struggling with quarterbacks. So bless their hearts, as my grandmother used to say.
Well, it's easy to sort of pile on the one who's losing the most, but you know, the Ravens have lost the last 5 out of their 7 games. So, Mark Hyman, what's the schedule look like? You know, as Latasha says, if they win out, you know, they do certainly have a chance of making the playoffs. And then after that, you know, Lord knows what happens. But what's the rest? I mean, the Houston Texans, you know, they're favored to win tonight. What happens next week and the week after that?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, as you look ahead, with 6 games remaining for the Ravens, there are only 2 teams on the schedule with winning records at this point. The Lions, who are 6-5, and then, of course, the Steelers, who are having a good year. But all of the other teams they're playing are under 500. The last 3 games of the season are against the Browns, the Colts, and the Bengals, which have 8 wins among them. So
divided among the 3 teams.
Among the 3 teams, 8 victories. But you know, to Latasha's point, you're talking about a league where virtually every team is in a position to either be at the bottom of the standings or in the playoffs in 6 weeks. There are 4 teams.
It's like no middle ground here.
I mean, the Ravens are not in a playoff slot right now. They're number 7. There's 6 playoff slots in the AFC. The Ravens are one of 4 teams with 5 victories at this point, and then there are 3 teams with 4 victories. So it's just anybody's guess at this point.
And Latasha, you talk about the running game for the Ravens and how that needs to be cranked up, because the passing game certainly doesn't seem to be going anywhere. I mean, Joe Flacco, from the very beginning of the season, has had a difficult time doing what we've expected him to do in prior seasons, which is throw the ball down the field a long way. He's got an incredible arm. But right now, you know, it's a whole bunch of 4 and 5 yard pass gains.
And that's fine, again, because the thing is, we all know that Joe Flacco is injured, so you don't really want to take a lot of risk and a lot of chances. But, hey, let's just keep it real. Baltimore's success has never really solely depended on a quarterback airing out the ball. I mean, even the year that they won the Super Bowl with Trent Dilfer as the quarterback, we all know that they won that ball game, that Super Bowl, solely due to the fact of smash-mouth defense and running the ball. I mean, remember Jamal Lewis? He had 2,000 yards one year. You know, so those days of Baltimore running the ball, unfortunately, they are in the past right now. They're in the rearview mirror. So let's not go. Let's not break up the formula here. It's not going to be Joe Flacco that has to be the reason why you win this game anyway. Let's just get back to the foundation of smash mouth defense, stopping the run, and being able to run the ball effectively and kill the clock, drown out the opposing defenses. That is, I mean, and that's honestly the formula. Let's just be honest. That's brutally honest. That is how Baltimore has won and had success anyway. It really hasn't gone down to being able to really pass the ball a whole lot. So let's just get back to the formula, the basis, and the foundation, and that's what Baltimore needs to get back to.
And, Mark, I mean, are the comparisons between this defense of the Ravens, which has now pitched, what, 2 shutouts so far this season, right?
Yeah.
You know, where they hold their opponents to 0 scores. You know, the comparisons to the Super Bowl winning defenses of Ray Lewis and that era, are they
stop right there?
Yeah, are they justifiable?
No, I think that the Super Bowl champion Ravens teams with Ray Lewis, you know, in the center of that defense, you're talking about historically one of the great defenses in NFL history. Last week, you know, pitched a shutout against the Packers, but important to note that Aaron Rodgers
wasn't playing.
Street clothes. recovering from a broken collarbone. So, you know, shutting out the Packers without Aaron Rodgers is quite, you know, of course, good to do, but very different from playing a Packer team with Aaron Rodgers at quarterback.
And, Latasha, when you look at the list of folks who are, you know, questionable for tonight or definitely not playing for tonight, it includes Terrell Suggs. I mean, it's not 100% sure he's going to play tonight. The injuries on this Ravens team this year have been really remarkable. Ronnie Stanley, he's part of the offensive line. He's a concussion. He's questionable because of a concussion. We've got this guy, Austin Howard, Jermaine Illuminor, Jimmy Smith, who has not been playing, you know, who's had a tough time all season. I mean, you got a lot of folks who continue to people this injured reserve list. I mean, this has been a rough year for the Ravens physically, hasn't it?
It has been, but the only thing is I really can't give the Ravens a pass on injuries. I mean, the Eagles have injuries, and they're on a 9-game winning streak. To me, it's next man up. I mean, this is where legends are born. Hello, everybody. How do you think Tom Brady became the quarterback that he is? It was because Drew Bledsoe got hurt, and he took advantage of that situation. So that's what I'm saying. I just feel like this is where superstars and legends are made. So if somebody is down, this is your time to shine. This is your time to go out and make a name for yourself. Case in point, they're playing the Texans tonight. Well, once upon a time, the Texans won the division without J.J. Watt here recently, you know. So, and J.J. Watt went out early in the season as well. And it's just that the Texans had still been able to find ways to win last year, win the division. And they've still been able to find ways to win as well. Watson being out, J.J. Watt once again being out. So I think definitely it is a tall task, but if we're going to use injuries as the reason, we can't do that. Every team has injuries. And like I said, I'm harping again on Philly. They've been able to win with injuries. And again, Tom Brady, and I'm not a Tom Brady fan much at all. But Tom Brady is off of an injury, and his legend was built and born off of Drew Bledsoe getting hurt. So somebody else needs to step up and make it happen for the Ravens.
Yeah, and Philadelphia, speaking of them, they're 10-1. They've already lost once. And I mean, and folks in Philly are not used to that, Mark. I mean, this is quite a revelation for them.
It's been a great year. I mean, this is, you know, harkens back to the Ron Jaworski era and Dick Vermeil, you know, winning a Super Bowl. But to go back to Latasha's point about injuries, I mean, football is inherently a brutal sport. You cannot get to week 16 of the NFL season without having, you know, a dozen or more serious injuries, you know, some season ending like the one to Aaron Rodgers and others like, you know, players who have concussions and must sit out for a prescribed period of time. So, you know, football is not a sport like the NBA or Major League Baseball where injuries are unexpected and, you know, teams get unlucky. That is baked into the culture of the NFL.
All right, we'll talk about some of those. We'll especially want to talk about a couple of these tough hits that Joe Flacco himself has taken this year, and the fines that have been levied, and the fact that various people have not been suspended, and a few people were calling for that. So we'll talk about injuries in the NFL. We'll talk about Roger Goodell and his contract suggestion to the owners. We'll talk about some of the owners' reaction to those suggestions, and we'll take your calls and comments. 410-662-8780, our email, midday@wipr.org, our Twitter handle at Midday Tom Hall. Mark Hyman is here. He's on the faculty of George Washington University, and Latasha Miles is a sports commentator who concentrates on football from her base in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Stick around. We will be right back.
This is Your Public Radio, 88.1. WYPR.
All right, the folks at NBC tell us that if it's Sunday, it's Meet the Press, but if it's Sunday night, it's football night in America, and we are talking about football here on Midday. By the way, coming up tomorrow on the program, Dr. Jeffrey Kahn of the Johns Hopkins Berman Institute of Bioethics stops by for one of his regular visits. We're going to be talking about gene drive technology, which at one time held great promise to do things like save endangered animals from extinction. Well, that was until they actually tried it. So we'll sort it all out tomorrow on Midday on Ethics, right here on Midday. If you've just joined us today, as I said, we're talking sports. The Baltimore Ravens take on the Houston Texans tonight in the nationally televised Monday night game. The Ravens are 5-5 on the season, in second place in their division behind the red-hot Pittsburgh Steelers. Joining me this afternoon, sports columnist and author Latasha Miles and Mark Hyman. He teaches in the sports management program at George Washington University. You are welcome to join our conversation, 410-662-8780. What do you think the Ravens' chances of making the playoffs are? And if they do make the playoffs, what are their chances of advancing? Our email here, midday@wipr.org. And to join us on Twitter, as dozens and dozens of people have made the fateful decision to do, @MiddayTomHall. So, Latasha, I want to talk about a couple of hits that Joe Flacco has taken. The first, we found that last Sunday against the Packers, a defensive lineman named Dean Lowry was fined $18,000+ for a roughing the passer penalty, which he disputed. He called it a cheese ball call. And then back late last month, on the Thursday night game, they were playing Miami, and this guy, Kiko Alonso, did a hit on Flacco as he was sliding to end a play. He was fined $9,000. And that fine actually wasn't even the biggest fine of that game. It was a Ravens player who was fined double that for a hit, a tackle on a running back for Miami. When coupled with the, you know, the all we hear about concussions and the fierceness and the long-standing effects of NFL players who've you know, had multiple concussions, is this one of the reasons that people apparently have been driven away from the game? Are these kinds of hits contributing to the fact that the TV ratings, for example, are down 20% from a couple of years ago?
I mean, I think that's a slight reason as to why. But since the beginning of time, football has known to be a gladiator-style, brutal, violent sport. But over the years, with the discovery of CTE and the movies about CTE starring Will Smith, and just the different changes and the effects of how we've seen like a Jim McMahon or like an Earl Campbell and various players, how football has affected them, it has become more of like they're trying to put more of a warranty, more of a protection clause on football. And I get that. But at the end of the day, it's always been expected. Before helmets got more technologically safe, you know, I'm talking about back in the day when the helmets only had the one bar and there wasn't as much guard across the face and there was definitely not a lot of the pillows and padding in it. Football has just always known to be a violent sport. I don't know what you expect. Now, some of the stuff has been intentional with some of the hits. Some of them could have been prevented, but we're talking about players who all their life they've been taught from Pop Warner League, go after the quarterback, sack the quarterback, get the ball, hit them hard, popped the ball. So you're asking them to completely change the demographic of how they've been raised and trained and played the sport. Also, the way the league is designed now, it is designed to protect the offense from pass interferences to roughing the quarterback, roughing the passer, chop block, this, that, and the third. But there's no protection of the defenses, hardly, you know, unless you're just hitting them in like in a blind side, like on a punt return, this or the third. But it's built to protect the quarterback and the offense, and I get it. But at the same time, it's almost like it's unfair. Like, how do you change the culture completely from these defenders? Now, I do think that a lot of the hits and the fines and stuff that have been warranted are justified. Like, I think that they should have been there. But at the same time, like I said, these defenders are really, really getting they're really, really getting handcuffed here because this is the way they've always been taught to play the game. And it's really hard to stop on the drop of a dime when a quarterback throws the ball out of bounds. And it's like, oh, gosh, you just got to stop on your tiptoes like skirk, you know, at full speed. It's really hard to do. And I just think it's a little bit unfair to the defenders, but it is warranted.
Mm-hmm. So, Mark, I mean, a lot of folks think the way LaTosha is thinking here that, you know, the players could do more to be slightly less violent. And this also seems to me puts a particular onus on the coaching staff. How do you coach in the NFL today when there is such a heightened awareness of the dangers of playing this game?
You know, it's a violent game, and that is inescapable. It's inherent in football. And I attended a symposium at the University of Maryland several weeks ago at which Bob Costas, the NBC sportscaster, spoke and made, I thought, an extremely provocative and interesting case that football will not exist or not exist at the way we know it in 20, 30 years because the game just can't be played safely and parents are not going to allow their kids to play youth football and high school football. And over time, the NFL will cease to be the major sports engine that we know today. And, you know, I think part of it is that as fans, we're beginning to see the human face of CTE, the players that we rooted for and that were our heroes not that long ago are now suffering the effects of, you know, degenerative brain disease. Players like Tony Dorsett, LaTosha, I think, mentioned Earl Campbell, Jim McMahon. These are all players that were our heroes. We feel like we know them. And now we're seeing the effects of the NFL on these players.
So the zeitgeist is really different. I mean, there's less tolerance for this kind of physical harm being perpetrated from one person to another.
Well, you know, I think it's difficult for us to imagine a sports world without, you know, the dominant presence of the NFL because it's become, you know, such an amazing entertainment product. But remember that 50, 60 years ago, boxing was the biggest sport in the United States. Nothing was bigger than boxing. And now, you know, you're when was the last time you saw a live boxing match?
Well, there's a big pay-per-view deal this summer, you know, and that seemed to make a whole lot of money. I think the winner walked away with $200 million and the loser walked away with $100 million.
Yeah.
But they're fewer and farther between.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, nobody would put boxing, you know, in a list of the top four or five spectator sports in the U.S. anymore.
I mean, LaTosha Miles, I mean, if football is to, in fact, go the way of the Pony Express, the people who are running the league right now certainly don't anticipate that, it seems. I mean, the plans that they've announced seem to call for something along the lines of $27 billion in revenue over the next 10 years. That's a pretty tall order, but they seem to think it's doable.
Well, that's because they're coming up with alternative ways to generate this revenue, i.e. playing football in England. Having the international effect is definitely helping it to the point to where they're talking about possibly even playing a game a week in England next season and seasons beyond, maybe even hosting a Super Bowl at Wembley Stadium. So bringing in that international appeal, that's definitely going to help generate more money. Also, there's more involvement from women, and no offense to guys, but women, we're usually the ones who are the consumers. We're usually ones who spend very, very frivolously at times, but nonetheless, they've kind of made it a little bit more catering to women. So again, we're putting more money into the NFL. So I think it has less to do with how it's happening, like he brought up eloquently about boxing changing. Even though boxing is not the top four professional sport, and of course you have NFL, NBA, MLB, and NHL respectively being the top four, but there's still ways that boxing was able to generate money. You cross promote an MMA star with the hottest boxer, and so therefore you had these $200 million and $100 million payouts. So the thing is, they're just going to kind of make more of a hybrid effort. If it is losing the money with people not watching it because it's not it's our heroes getting injured and people don't want to see as much violence, they will find some other way to generate this revenue, and that's what they have been doing.
And Mark Hyman, there are projections that the four networks who broadcast NFL games are on par to lose about $500 million in revenue this year. That's a chunk of change.
And this is the great concern of the NFL and, you know, the 32 owners who comprise the league. You know, we're now beginning to see revenues, the potential for revenues begin to flatten out or decrease. The NFL relies very heavily on national TV. That is really it's the largest revenue source, really the bread and butter. And for years, despite these concerns about head trauma, TV ratings didn't seem to be affected. Now, for the first time, we're beginning to see some diminishment of TV ratings, and it'll be interesting to see how the NFL responds to that. I mean, there are many other potential reasons for the decrease in ratings. You know, parody. Some people think parody is a bad thing in the NFL. Dull games. The NBA has, you know, become wildly popular. You know, the NFL's response to the domestic violence crisis and the way it's handled players. So, you know, I don't think we can identify head trauma as the sole reason, but the NFL, for the first time, we're beginning to see people turning away from the NFL in ways that that they haven't before.
And, Latasha, we talked about this a lot last time you and Mark were here. One of the contributing factors to a decrease in NFL viewership that a lot of folks point to is the Colin Kaepernick controversy about players kneeling, some players continuing to kneel during the national anthem. At this juncture in the season, you know, 11 games in, how much do you impute to that continuing controversy, a controversy that the President of the United States has not shied away from weighing in? We have an email from Daily Che who asks that question. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that is a huge, honestly, I think that's probably more of the bigger reason why there is a decrease in viewership. In addition to, like he mentioned as well, I think it's oversaturated on Thursday. Like, we don't need a football game on every Thursday. And if we do, there's got to be better games. Like, what happened to, we didn't get football on Thursdays until Thanksgiving. Like, that was so sacred. And then we got football Thursdays after, but anyway, like I said, that's another reason as well. But I definitely think the Colin Kaepernick, him still not having a job in the NFL, rings bells. And then it kind of got came back. It resurfaced when he became the GQ cover for Citizen, not Person of the Year or Man of the Year for GQ, but Citizen of the Year. So I think it kind of reminded us once again. And then with Donald Trump constantly bringing up mixing sports and politics, the ball situation, the Ovechkin situation as well. So, like, there's no more sanctuary of, we don't have sports separated from politics. Like, we used to use sports as like an escape of the Monday through Friday rigmarole, or it was like water cooler talk. But now there's blurred lines. There's always politics invading sports. It's like politics are what's weighing heavier than the actual sport. Like, nobody's caring about who won the game. We're actually counting who all kneeled, or, oh gosh, Richard Sherman kneeled and such didn't, or whatever the case may be. Like, that's honestly become more of the conversation here. So there's no escape anymore for sports. And I think people are kind of tired of that. Like, they don't have they don't have sports as the platform that they've always been familiar with, it being a sanctuary, it being an escape or looking forward to it. I think that maybe if they just get rid of the national anthem televised, not get rid of the national anthem at the games, but maybe not televise it so people don't get to be that sensitive and or offended off whether who stood and who didn't, then I think that would be one of the resolutions, and we can kind of get away from it. And also maybe if Kaepernick does get a job, either if it was in the backup capacity, but maybe him getting back in the NFL, that might help as well. And again, I do remember Kaepernick did not, he opted out of the contract, so that part is definitely his fault. But I see a lot of other quarterbacks that he's better than. Like, I think that he should have gotten a chance to work out for the Texans when Watson went down. But nonetheless, I think that that would honestly be another solution to get people back into the game.
410-662-8780. That's our number here at Midday. Our email, midday@wypr.org. You can follow us on Twitter @MiddayTomHall. Latasha Miles and Mark Hyman are here. Mark, Colin Kaepernick does appear to be a considerably better quarterback than a whole lot of the guys who are playing at the moment. Bob writes in and says TV ratings are down, as Latasha mentioned, to overexposure. Games are Sunday morning from London. You got two in the afternoon. You got one on Sunday night. And then you wake up the next day and you got one on Monday night. You got one on Thursday. It's just overexposed. Do you think that's part of it as well?
Well, I think one point that we ought to make is that 15 million people watched NFL games last week. So we're not exactly presiding over the death of the NFL. Let's not confuse this conversation with the NFL ceasing to exist, because the NFL is still a wildly popular sports product. We're talking about just the incremental decreases in viewership. Colin Kaepernick is not in the NFL because of his political views, and not because they're out of sync with the political views of ownership. It has more to do with the economic consequences of signing him. This is my view. No team wants to take that on. They don't want to have to deal with sponsors who are going to, you know, be concerned about the impact on their, the people buying their products. They don't want to deal with fans.
You've got the guy who owns Papa John saying that the reason his business is down is because people are taking a knee during the national anthem. And to Latasha's point about whether or not the networks broadcast it, they never used to broadcast it.
Exactly.
They were filling that time with commercials. They were making money on that time.
I mean, Donald Trump did not do the NFL any favors. Let's be clear about that, because he's brought attention to an issue that I think probably could have been resolved in a way that I think it would have been resolved by now. I think maybe some team would have signed him by now, but the stakes have become so high and the risks for teams signing him have become, you know, too great.
Even though the ratings are down, Mr. Goodell, the commissioner of the league, has suggested, this is after making more than $200 million in salary over the last several years, that his a reasonable compensation package for him would be $50 million a year, the use of a private plane for the rest of his life, and health insurance. Michael Che on Saturday Night Live had a great line about, if you didn't think health insurance was important, here's a guy making $50 million a year and flying around on a private plane, and he's concerned about it so much that he puts it in his contract request. I mean, Latasha Miles, that just seems craziness. And what do you think? I mean, he's been in a public battle with one of the most influential owners, Jerry Jones, the guy who owns the Dallas Cowboys. Are the owners satisfied enough with Mr. Goodell's performance to agree to a package like that?
No, you cannot get that type of raise, especially with the viewership declining. Like, you've got to be kidding me. I think overall, like, people are just not pleased, owners that is, and fans aren't pleased with, like, the handling of the Spygate, the handling of Deflategate, the handling of the Ray Rice situation. I just think that a lot of people just still have a sour and bad taste in their mouth, and then this guy has the audacity to ask for these ambitious things. Now, granted, I understand you're the commissioner, but you're the commissioner of the NFL, not like not over NATO, or, you know, this is not like we're talking about the NFL here, to where how many balls did you snap, Goodell? Like, how much of your body are you risking to where you're asking for all of this? And that can get into a whole nother topic about how the owners make so much money versus the players, who we've talked about getting risking their bodies and stuff. But that's a whole nother subject. But I just don't think that it's fair for Goodell to sit here and kind of ask for this bonus when you don't really have the backing for it. Again, the way some of these things have handled, you've dropped the ball on a lot of these situations. There's a lot of, I mean, my goodness, think about when the Patriots won the Super Bowl back in February. Listen to how the fans booed him. And you think that people really want to pay you extra money? That's going to be a negative. I understand.
Any chance someone will try to depose him? I mean, Mark, what do you think?
Who do you have in mind, Tom?
Roger
Goodell is going to be the commissioner for quite a long time. The commissioner of any sports league has one job only, and that is to generate revenue and to increase revenue year after year. If he does that, he can run around in his underwear and probably will get, you know, a contract renewal. That's the only criterion that matters to ownership, and Roger Goodell has done a pretty good job of that.
Well, you know, Christopher Plummer is replacing Kevin Spacey in this new movie. Stephen Colbert called for Christopher Plummer to get rid of all the Confederate statues and put up statues of Christopher Plummer. I'd like to suggest Christopher Plummer as the commissioner of the NFL.
I like
that. Just a suggestion. All right, we're going to take a little break. Latasha Miles is a sports commentator and the author of the book, When Football Season Turns You Into His Side Chick, The Ultimate Survival Guide for Relationships and Households During Football Season. Mark Hyman is on the faculty at George Washington University. He's the author of several books, including Concussions and Our Kids, which he co-authored with Dr. Robert Cantu. You can join us when we come back. 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wipr.org, our Twitter handle @MiddayTomHall. Before we take a break, it is our custom here on Midday to pause every Monday and acknowledge those who have fallen victim to homicide in our city during the previous week. We stand in witness to their untimely deaths, and we remember their families and friends in their hour of grief. So far this year, 315 people in Baltimore City have lost their lives to violence. In addition to a man who has yet to be identified by police, LeVar Bailey, age 40, and Trayvon Johnson, age 30, were killed last week. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. And welcome back to Midday. I'm Tom Hall. If you've just joined us, it's Midday on Sports. Mark Hyman is here. He teaches sports management at George Washington University. And Latasha Miles is on the line with us from Winston-Salem. She's the author of When Football Season Turns You Into His Side Chick. You are welcome to join our conversation. 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wipr.org, to send us a tweet @Midday. Tom Hall. We have a comment from Jessica who says, my fantasy football league is already boycotting the NFL over the way players have disrespected the flag. If the NFL were to stop televising the anthem, that would be the end of pro football in America. I want to remind you that a local activist here in the African-American community, Ralph Moore, a highly respected guy of long-time activist here in our community, has started a movement to boycott watching the Ravens. He just posted on Facebook the other day, don't watch the game tonight, in support of the players who are taking a knee during the national anthem. So that particular controversy, as we've talked about now several times, continues to rage throughout the NFL. Let's go to Phil in North Baltimore. Phil, welcome to Midday with Latasha Miles and Mark Hyman.
Oh, good afternoon. I was going to make a couple of points, but regarding what you just mentioned about Ralph Moore, that's my reason for not wanting to watch pro football, is because they don't respect the anthem. So an opposite view, but then again, I guess different people feel they don't want to watch the games for whatever reason.
Sure.
The injuries over the years, I think for a long time, they didn't really seem to address or care about it that much, you know, until just recently, perhaps with when you think of all the injuries that happen to football players and repercussions throughout their lives. And the schedules, as the lady said, about like Thursday night, do we really need so many games? You know, I think Sunday traditionally was the day, and maybe one Monday night game that Rune Arledge came up with the idea back in 1970, but I think the Thursday night is too much. And lastly, regarding college football also, I think there's so many bowl games, it's ridiculous. There's something like 35 bowl games now. But a long time ago, I remember it was just four or five, you know.
Yeah, they used to be basically on New Year's Day, and that was it. Let's talk a little bit about college, and thanks for your call, Phil. Latasha Miles, college football was thrown into a bit of a tizzy on Saturday night when the buzzer sounded, and Auburn was the victor over number one Alabama. What does that mean for the future of the known universe?
Wow, this, I know it's like the world stopped when that happened, but we still cannot cancel Alabama out. I mean, that Wisconsin and Ohio State game is huge, and I'm going to be honest, I have mixed feelings about Alabama's situation. I don't like when it's constantly the same team who wins. I like the underdog stories, and because I'm from North Carolina, I like when the ACC does well. Like, we've always been considered the SEC stepchild. Well, lo and behold, thank God for Clemson recently, and then the resurgence of Miami and things of that nature. So I like when there's new title holders there. But because I am a LeBron fan, interesting thing about it is that it's like I need Nick Saban to win the national championship in order for LeBron to win. This has been happening since 2011.
Every year, what's the connection there? You got me. I'm lost on that
really,
one.
Oh, yeah. It's really, really interesting. So since 2011.
And Nick Saban, we should remind folks, is the coach of Alabama.
The extremely wealthy,
the $11 million man at Alabama. Okay, so what's the connection between LeBron James and Nick Saban?
Yeah, so since 2011, every year that Nick Saban has won in January, won the national championship title in January, LeBron has won in the finals. Most recently, last year, Clemson won, LeBron lost in the finals. The year before, Nick Saban beat Clemson in the national title, and LeBron beat Golden State. So I almost need Nick Saban to win, but I'm kind of thinking like maybe if they don't get in the playoffs, does that mean LeBron doesn't get in the playoffs? But then again, maybe it's kind of like a wash, like it's a clean surface and there's no pressure. Nick Saban does not control LeBron's fate if he doesn't get in the playoffs.
That
so
nice.
I have mixed feelings.
It would be nice to think that Nick Saban does not control LeBron's fate. He certainly controls a lot of the state of Alabama, Mark Hyman.
Definitely.
I mean, and you know, he's not alone in being a very highly compensated state employee. There's a piece in, SB Nation, I think, something like that, with the highest paid public employees in all 50 states. And it may not surprise many folks to find that in many of those states, it's either the football coach or the basketball coach of the major university.
So we talk about this in class often. Because in the case of Alabama, Nick Saban makes $11 million a year. The governor of Alabama, her salary is $120,000 a year. So the question is, what makes a college football coach worth $11 million a year? And the answer, I think, will not surprise our listeners, and that is that Alabama football turns a $47 million profit each year. And I don't know whether the state of Alabama is running a surplus, but I kind of doubt it. So is he worth $11 million a year? I guess, you know, from a business perspective, he probably is.
Well, but many folks have made the observation that the revenue that these teams, and Alabama's not alone in their revenue generation, rarely make it back to the general fund of these universities. It's not like it's paying for test tubes and lab coats.
Yeah. Well, interesting. But the university does, from a reputational standpoint, there are young people in high school right now who don't live in Alabama who want to attend the University of Alabama because of the reputation of the football team. They want to go to Alabama football games on Saturday. And an alumni give it. I mean, there are many ways in which universities benefit from successful football. They can also suffer if the football team does poorly or if players misbehave and so forth. So it's a high-stakes kind of analysis.
And it's all what the market will bear, but it is amazing to think that the market would bear that many millions of dollars to that many people who are coaching teams. Sometimes the teams don't even do very well. I mean, you know, look at what's happened to the University of Maryland. This is not a stellar team these last several years.
Yeah, it's a minority of programs, major programs that actually turn a profit, but those that do can generate a lot of revenue for their schools.
Let's go to the phones. Tyler in Hanover, welcome to Midday with Latasha Miles and Mark Hyman. Oh, Tyler is gone. His comment was that he's going to the game tonight, regardless of their record, because he loves the Ravens. So Tyler is the kind of fan that Roger Goodell is hoping will stick with us. How about Jack in Glen Burnie? Welcome to Midday, sir.
Good afternoon.
Hi, what's on your mind?
Well, what's on my mind is that many of them star quarterbacks have been hurt recently because of the size of the defensive and offensive linemen.
Yeah, they're pretty big dudes, aren't they?
And when Aaron Rodgers went down at Green Bay, suddenly they don't really have a quarterback and they no longer really have a team. And the same thing has happened in Texas and a couple of other places. And the size of the defensive and offensive linemen is contributing to this greatly.
I think you're right, Jack. Thank you for the call. So, Latasha, what are the chances that, you know, we'll have like a box the way they give you when you board an airplane? You know, if your suitcase doesn't fit in the box, they won't let you board. Will they have a box for offensive linemen to keep the size down? I mean, at some point, there's going to be an 8-foot, 400-pound defensive or tackle at some point, right?
And they will welcome them, especially Roger Goodell, because remember, he's trying to generate more revenue. Who wouldn't come out to pay and see an 8-foot offensive lineman, or a nose tackle of that proportion? So I honestly don't, as long as they're not using steroids or illegally using drugs, it's come one, come all. I think it's kind of, and if you can get a guy that big, that's that fast, I mean, for example, look at Vince Wilfork, a future Hall of Famer when it comes to a lineman, Super Bowl rings galore. I mean, this guy's over 300 pounds and flexible and healthy and can turn backflips. I mean, to me, that's kind of like one of the seven wonders of the world. So if we can get an 8-foot guy who can do all of that and be able to stop the run if he's a nose tackle or be able to protect Aaron Rodgers, I don't think that they would turn him away from the NFL if he could do that.
Here's a tweet from Mom Holt, who says, I heard a coach tell my 12-year-old brother to hurt the player, get him out of my son's, never allowed. All right, so this is it's tough to make complete sense of that, but I heard a coach tell my 12-year-old brother to hurt the player, so get him out. This is my mom saying, I'm never going to allow my son to play football. Leonard tweets us, without fantasy gambling football, where's the NFL? College is all that's left. Goodell, it's all about greed.
Well, it is a business. You know, we think of the NFL as something, very personal, but there are 32 owners of this business, and it really is a bottom line business for them.
Latasha, I want to ask you about one thing. You mentioned Alexander Ovechkin. He's the star hockey player for the Washington Capitals, and he's also a very good friend of Vladimir Putin, the president of Russia. Is there a case to be made that Ovechkin, as popular as he is doing some good PR for the Russian government in the nation's capital?
I mean, he definitely is. Again, he's very popular. We're talking about a guy who's like the LeBron James of the NHL when it comes to like MVPs and getting all these hat tricks and getting all these feats and things like that. But I'm at the point to where I just really wish we could get back to sports without politics. I mean, I know that athletes can have several opinions, but I really just miss sports being my sanctuary. So I like my dose of Alexander Ovechkin toothless, getting hat tricks, MVPs, and mentioned metaphorically in J. Cole rap lyrics. That's the way I feel. And the city of Washington, D.C. is starving for championships right now. So can we maybe perhaps put more of the conversation about Ovechkin in? How are you going to get over the hump against the Pittsburgh Penguins in the postseason and be able to hoist the Stanley Cup? I don't really, I want it to get back to the separation of I'm so emotionally drained of dealing with politics and sports.
Well,
I just
Latasha,
want to deal with the X's and O's.
I bet you got a lot of amens on that score. Latasha Miles is a sports commentator and the author of the book When Football Season Turns You Into His Side Chick, the ultimate survival guide for relationships and households during football season. Thanks, Latasha. We'll talk to you next time. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Mark Hyman is on the faculty at George Washington University in their sports management program. He's the author of several books, including Concussions and Our Kids, which he co-authored with Dr. Robert Cantu. Mr. Hyman, always a pleasure, sir. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Tom.
We want to also thank the Diz for supplying lunch today. The Diz is located at 300 West 30th Street in the heart of Remington. They feature signature burgers, wings, steaks, and jumbo lump crab cakes. The Diz is open for lunch and dinner with breakfast served on the weekends. They're on the web at the Diz Baltimore. Tomorrow.com. That'll do it for us today. Coming up tomorrow, it's Midday on Ethics with Dr. Jeffrey Kahn of the Johns Hopkins Berman Institute of Bioethics. We'll talk about the unintended or at the very least uncertain consequences of new technology called gene drive technology. It's equal parts exciting and frankly terrifying. So Dr. Jeff Kahn joins me tomorrow to talk about it here on Midday. Hope you can join us as well. Until then, thanks so much for listening. I really appreciate it. Go Ravens. We want them to win. Let's face it, we do. I'm Tom Hall. Have a great day.